Binoy, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Firstly, how can border security play a key role in prevention and protection against terrorism?
Well, this is a very interesting point, and I think brings it back to the issue about how these attacks tend to happen. And unfortunately, a lot of these attacks don't tend to happen from individuals who have entered the country but on documentation, visa, and so on. And a lot of these individuals tend to have actually been, you know, if they're not second generation, they've certainly grown up in a place, you know, since children, and they've certainly adjusted to the local surrounds of a country. The case of the Catalonian incident and the attacks in Barcelona, we had the attackers, many of them were actually, you know, from the area and certainly been raised in the area in Spain itself. So we have a problem between, on the one hand, beefing up border security and talking about monitoring individuals coming in, but then we have the other fundamental problem, which is the type of assailant, and the type of assailant tends to be an individual who has no criminal record and then rather rapidly then assumes they radicalized and so on in response to, for example, a call, a message, be it Islamic State and so on, and then proceeds to attack local residents. And I think this is where we've got a big problem.
Very interesting point you raise about a lot of these perpetrators being people who don't have prior criminal histories. And I want to delve a little bit more into that in a moment. But firstly, two Australians were injured in this particular attack in Spain. When it comes to international travel, what do Australians need to look out for, and what should the government be doing to warn Australians planning on travelling internationally in terms of staying safe from these sort of events?
Well, of course, the reality of it is that a place like Barcelona beforehand would have been as safe as any to travel to. But the context of these attacks is that, and I think it was put rather well by a Spanish journalist who called it postcard terrorism, which is essentially, of course, that certain venues that are frequented, very popular venues, such as, you know, Barcelona and, of course, Berlin or London, and these particular venues, which are known for tourists, of course, so they are the objects of these attacks. And so the reality of it is that, of course, when Australians are traveling overseas, they should be traveling with, of course, an awareness that these cities are going to be vulnerable to these modern attacks, this type of modern postcard terrorism, because the whole point, of course, of these attacks is that they come out of the blue. There are in very heavily visited sections for, you know, reasons of leisure, reasons of pleasure, and of course that's the reason why they're targeted. So unfortunately, there's always a risk of some of these things happening, even though it's a very small one. The reality of it is that there have been a spate of these attacks. It's not as if it's happening every day. They're meant to be spectacular, painful, and of course, and very much evocative. But the reality is that there will always be a risk, that it's never going to be a case of measurable quantity. We just don't know.
If you've just tuned into The Daily this morning here on 2SER, we're speaking with Dr. Binoy Campmark, a senior lecturer in global urban and social studies from RMIT University, and we're having a chat about the wake of the Barcelona tragedy, which we saw last week. Now, I understand, now you spoke a little bit about the people who are often involved in these attacks. Now, I understand that a lot of them, and especially this is in the UK, a lot of them have been conducted by second generation people from migrant families. What sort of things should governments be looking at in terms of not just trying to prevent, you know, border security and trying to stop these attacks from happening, but in trying to prevent these sort of people being radicalized and this sort of culture which seems to be developing within these different groups?
Well, the fundamental aspect of it, of course, and this is the old hoary chestnut of education. It has to come from the context of persuasion and education from the communities themselves, where these, you know, men, and most of them are men, of course, where they tend to come from, and the local communities in which, where, for example, the local religious halls and the schools and the particular places where you would tend to find them congregating. So there is that particular element, of course, which is very important. So I think a very important example would be, if you take for example in the context of be it Australia, be it, and you mentioned the case with certain large Muslim communities, certainly in, say, Bradford, for example. One has to just be mindful of the fact that, of course, messages are spoken. There are various philosophies and ideas exchanged about how, you know, say, Islam's role in society. So the local authorities have to be mindful how that can be reconciled with peaceful, existence, coexistence with others. And the vast majority of individuals of Muslim faith, of course, do abide by this, but there are also messages that are attractive and translated in a rather negative way towards things like democracy, whether you can reconcile Islam and democracy, and so on. And so a lot of it is based on working with members of the Muslim community, having these what they call outreach programs, to be sure that individuals who are perhaps susceptible to radicalization are picked up early on and convinced or put on programs and trying, you know, that try to be essentially put on another path, so to speak. So I think it's education is key. And only then, you know, can we then really deal with this seriously, because, of course, that's a fundamental aspect. Now, the other aspect, of course, is being mindful about, even though it's not perhaps as relevant here, but in these latest attacks, to be mindful, of course, about foreign policy involvements. What's Australia's role, for example, or what's Britain's role in terms of being involved in the Middle East? Now, that's also been a controversial point before in terms of generating interest from Islamic State and these more radical groups that are threatening harm to these countries.
A lot of factors to take into account there. A lot of the things you just spoke about, of course, do come in at like a broader government level and the levels of, you know, community leaders and things like that. In terms of the Australian public, what sort of responsibilities do the Australian public have in terms of trying to prevent terrorism or be a part of terrorism prevention?
Well, I think it's one of those things that has been pursued essentially since the, you know, in the aftermath of the September 11th, 2001 attacks, when the Howard government started to layer the Australian security state, I suppose, with various bits of legislation on encouraging Australians to naturally report things that are suspicious. So, for example, one of the things that's always reiterated is the hotline in terms of reporting anything suspicious. But again, it's like anything else. One has to use judgment in terms of how these things work, you know, report anything that may seem out of the ordinary. But that's a judgment call that, of course, an Australian resident or anybody would have to make in any context. But those are the old rules that apply in terms of intuition, is there something wrong, and so on. I suppose the problem with these things, with these latest attacks, is that it's very hard to have a sense of an intuition about what's going on when a vehicle is commandeered, where there is very little in terms of traces as to what the intention of the attacker might be until very soon before the attack. And then, whether it's a truck, whether it's a van, and so on. And this is the reason why this form of attack is rather different. It's perhaps different if a person is, carrying a suspicious package, which might be a bomb, or looking suspiciously equipped with weapons and so on. It may be a bit different. But something like this kind of vehicle terrorism, is far more problematic. But ultimately, as with any other thing, it's a collective effort where people just have to be mindful of activities that might be suspicious, but more difficult if we're dealing with these sorts of vehicle attacks.
Binoy, thanks so much for joining me. Always incredibly complex discussion to be had after any event like this. So I appreciate you giving us your time to throw in some information.